Hey, you guys. Time once again for Flickers of Fear, my movie review series. So let's talk about this bonkers movie. Okay. Now, I have to say, I can't remember exactly when or where I first heard about this movie, A Cure for Wellness. I absolutely did not see it back in 2016, back when it came out in theaters. And for whatever reason, it actually kind of like flew under my radar for several years after that. But then it seemed like over the past year, 18 months, something like that, I kept seeing like a lot of horror channels I watch and a lot of like horror blogs I read and stuff like that. It kept showing up on there, like being discussed or, you know, hey, this is a movie that didn't get the attention it deserved, like at the time it came out. Like it seemed like there was sort of like, I don't know, there was just like a lot of people talking about it. So I saw that it was on Tubi and I was like, well, that actually sounds kind of interesting from, you know, the sentence or two that I read about it. So I was like, I'm gonna check that out. Now, you'd think that I would have heard about it because the movie was directed by Gore Verbinski, who most people, like, that are not really into horror movies probably know mostly from the first three Pirates of the Caribbean movies. He's done a bunch of other ones, too, but those are, like, his best known. But I'm honestly mostly familiar with him because of his work on the excellent, excellent 2002 American version of The Ring, which is actually one of my favorite horror movies of the 2000s. So, A Cure for Wellness has kind of like all of the really unsettling, but like beautiful, but also grotesque kind of like imagery that, you know, that his past, you know, history would imply. And though it was a box office bomb and received really, really mixed reviews at the time, I think largely because of its excessive length. It's 2 hours and 26 minutes, which is very long for a horror film, but I didn't really mind it all that much. And I think that the other main criticism was like some audiences and some critics like thought the plot was too ridiculous or nonsensical or something like that, or, you know, they had like kind of, you know, or it was too convoluted or something like that. But all of those things aside, I actually enjoyed this quite a bit. And I think that if you go into it, like if you approach it as I did, as sort of like a modern day gothic horror movie, a gothic story that kind of has this really like creepy mystery, has some real kind of grotesque, like I said, like very squirm inducing body horror in it. And the third act just goes balls to the wall, like ape shit. It's great. As gothic literature kind of tended to do. Now, it's not adapted from a book per se, but the screenplay, which was written by Justin Haythe, or Haythe, I'm not sure how you pronounce his last name, sorry about that, was actually partly inspired by the 1924 German novel The Magic Mountain by Thomas Mann, which is also about like kind of a Swiss spa, just like this is. Now, pretty much every review of A Cure for Wellness that I've read and that I've watched points out the film's similarity to Martin Scorsese's movie Shutter Island. That is a fair comparison. This does like some different shit, but it's kind of in the same ballpark. There's also shades of Crimson Peak, the Guillermo del Toro film, and The Shining, you know, the Stanley Kubrick movie. But I mean, I'm not even going to be mad at that, because any movie that's like mentioned in the same breath as those three, I'm just kind of like, ooh, my ears just perk right up. I'm just like, yeah, that sounds like shit I want to see, you know what I mean? This also kind of has little sprinklings of maybe Frankenstein, Phantom of the Opera, some Hammer horror kind of like stuff to it, and a little bit of David Cronenberg, because like I said, it does have some like weird body horror, medical type horror, that type of stuff, you know, just added for extra spice in there. So I'm gonna say, even though this was, you know, a failure, a financial failure, big time, you do have to give props to Gore Verbinski in this. I mean, it's pretty fucking ballsy to make a big budget. I mean, $40 million, that's like a big budget for a long horror movie like this. A big budget Hollywood movie that's this long and this fucking odd. It's just like a really, really weird like movie to come out of like a mainstream studio. And it's kind of like a shame that the fact that it was such a failure at the box office meant that we would get fewer of these kind of movies, you know, going forward. You know, one that's not based on an already existing IP or a book or anything like that. It's just, you know, part of a franchise or a sequel or a reboot or anything like that. This is an actual, like, original story that somebody actually, like, just made up for the movie. And, you know, and they spent all this money on it and it looks, like, really good. But, you know, it's a little weird. And like I said, people couldn't really, like, relate to it, I guess. I mean, I'm not, like, trying to oversell it too much. It's not a masterpiece or anything like that, but it's still, like, a pretty damn good movie, and I'm always going to applaud the audacity of a filmmaker who's essentially handed $40 million bucks by, like, a big mainstream studio and have him say, you know what I'm going to make with this $40 million? I'm going to make a completely batshit sci-fi horror movie with mad scientists, dental torture, nutty incest-based plot twists, and so many eels. You know what I mean? It takes a lot of balls to do something like that, so fucking mad props there. So what is this movie about? All right, so we start out with this little bit of a prologue, I guess you would call it. And they're showing us this unnamed man. You don't find out who he is until later on. He's working by himself, like, so he's all alone in this big, massive darkened office. So obviously he's been working late. Some kind of financial, you know, he's monitoring the stocks on all these computers and stuff. Now he's kind of like glancing over, looking at his mail, and he sees this very strange, like, hand-addressed envelope with this sort of like black, one of those wax seals, you know, like on the back. I love those, by the way. You can still buy, like, you know, kits to do that. And I kind of want to, but I don't really have anybody to write letters to anymore, which is a shame. So he sees this envelope in his pile of mail. And he goes to open it because he's like, huh, what the fuck is this shit? But before he can get it open, he actually, like, clutches his chest, really, and he ends up, like, keeling over and dying, like, ostensibly of a heart attack. So we're then introduced to our main protagonist, this young, kind of soulless executive whose name is Lockhart. I don't think that his first name is ever mentioned, which I'm sure was probably a deliberate choice. If it was, forgive me, but I don't remember anybody ever saying his first name. It might have been written someplace, but everybody just called him Lockhart or Mr. Lockhart. So Lockhart is played by Dane DeHaan. So Lockhart has just gotten this big promotion at this massive, like, New York City financial firm where he works. Like, he even gets the big corner office with, like, the window looking out over the city and blah, blah, blah. But he's having, like, a sort of celebratory, like, having some champagne there with his coworkers. Then he gets called up to the boardroom in a way that kind of sounds like, hey, come to the principal's office kind of tone, you know what I mean? So he's just like, oh, shit, I just got a promotion. What the fuck did I do? So it turns out that the rest of the board members, while they admire his, let's call it, creative way with numbers, they point out to him that this big account, which landed him this promotion, they're like, we saw that you did some, like, shenanigans there with that one client's accounts, and you probably thought that you were being real slick, but the shenanigans aren't as well hidden as you probably thought they were. It's like, this is amateur hour. So basically they're like, we have this big merger coming up and the SEC is gonna go over our shit, like, with a fine tooth comb, and they're gonna find this shit. So they essentially, like, kind of blackmail him into doing this sort of troublesome errand that has come up. So turns out that the CEO of the company, Roland Pembroke, they need his signature for this big merger that's going through. Problem is, Roland went off to Switzerland to this spa, like, for some R&R, and he sent them a letter, the same kind of letter with the black wax seal on it and everything like that, where he's like, yeah, I've decided this corporate life, it's not for me, it's killing me, and it's like, maybe you guys will see the truth one day too, and essentially saying, I'm not coming back. So because they need his signature, they're like, well, you have to go to Switzerland and bring him back to New York so we can do this merger thing. Otherwise, this whole company is going to fall apart. You're going to go to prison. You know, it's going to be like a big fucking ordeal. So Lockhart, he's pretty pissed off at having to, like, play gopher. He thought he was just going to, like, hang out in his new corner office and everything was going to be hunky-dory. But he doesn't think this errand is going to take all that long. So he just grudgingly, like, jets off to Switzerland. Now, even though this is supposed to be Switzerland, it was actually shot in Germany. So there was actually, like, a pretty, you know, in the wide shots, I think that is actually, like, a pretty well-known castle in Germany that's, like, on top of the hill where they shot it. So he's driven up to his destination, this spa, like, through this town full of very surly locals. They're always kind of, like, you know, looking at him all suspiciously, like, from the windows. Like, one guy even, like, throws eggs at the car and shit like that. And, you know, Lockhart's like, what the fuck is up with that? And the driver says, oh, well, there's kind of a dark history between the town residents and the wealthy folk that stay up there at the spa. He also informs Lockhart, he's like, wow, you're a lot younger than the people I usually drive up there, and usually nobody comes back from there. Like, usually they go up there and they stay. And Lockhart's like, yeah, that's not gonna happen. I'm just going to bring a dude back, and, you know, hopefully this will take no more than 20 minutes. So Lockhart gets up to the spa, which is like this just breathtaking Gothic estate at the foot of the Swiss Alps, and he marches in and demands to see Pembroke. He's like, yeah, I'm here on business. I don't have time to fuck around. I need to take him back to New York. It's a business matter. Visiting hours are over, though, and the spa's staff, well, they're not overtly hostile to him, but they're apparently very, like, sticklers for the rules. It's like 20 minutes past visiting hours, they're like, we're sorry, we can't do anything about it. So he pulls a Karen on the woman at the front desk, and they allow him to go see the director of the spa, whose name is Dr. Vollmer. He's played by Jason Isaacs, and he's great in this. Now, Dr. Vollmer seems pleasant enough. He tells Lockhart that most of the patients at the spa are these kind of, like, high-powered executive types, or, like, billionaires, stuff like that. He says, well, none of these people are very well, and they came here to get away from the rat race that was, like, destroying them physically and mentally, and most of them don't want to leave. Evidently, what the methods that they use are, it's kind of, like, old-timey. It looks like an old-timey spa. Like, I really love the production design on this, by the way. But it looks like a really old-timey spa, or, like, an old-timey mental asylum or something like that. It looks kind of like that. So one of the main things they use is hydrotherapy. And most of this is utilizing this supposedly miraculous water from the natural aquifer that's underneath the castle where the spa is. And as Lockhart kind of, like, wanders around, it does seem like the patients that he sees, who all seem to be, like, having a good time, they're playing croquet and, like, you know, doing landscape paintings and shit like that, like, out on the lawn, they all have little white pajamas and white robes and slippers, and they all look super comfy. They all look pretty happy and, like, pretty relaxed. So Dr. Vollmer says, okay, well, I tell you what, he's like, you can't go see Pembroke now because visiting hours are over, but I tell you what I'll do, like, he has a therapy tonight at, like, 7 or whatever, and you can come back later tonight and see him then. Like, maybe he probably won't want to go with you, but we'll ask him, you know, he's not a prisoner or anything like that. So Lockhart's like, well, fuck me, now he has, like, 4 hours to kill. So he says to the driver, take me back down to the town so I can get a hotel or whatever. But on the way back down the hill, like, down to the town, they're involved in a horrific car accident where, like, a big deer, like, runs in front of the car. The car, like, fucking flips. It's just, it's a whole situation. So that happens. And then Lockhart wakes up presumably 3 days later, and he is now ensconced in the spa, like, in a hospital bed with a horribly, horribly broken leg. So from then on, the mystery about the spa begins to deepen. And Lockhart starts to become, like, more and more convinced that something very sinister is going on, even though most of the patients he talks to, including Pembroke, seem very serene and seem happy there, and, like I said, don't want to leave. The one exception, although she's kind of, like, she's not so much, oh, I want to leave, but she has, like, a different thing going on, is this weird young woman named Hannah. Now, she's actually played by Mia Goth, who I just talked about not too long ago, because she was in X, the Ty West movie from 2022. Now, she's one of the only people at the spa who isn't old, and she's also the only one that's not actively receiving treatments. He asks about this, and she says, oh, that's because Dr. Vollmer says I'm a special case, although she doesn't appear to know what that means. And she also tells Lockhart that she doesn't really remember how long she's been there. She's like, I've just been here as long as I can remember. The only thing she does know is that Dr. Vollmer told her that her father will come and get her when she's well again. She has presumably never met her father, doesn't know who her father is. So as the plot unfolds, very slowly, although I didn't mind that, like I said, this is a very long movie, it's a commitment, so I didn't even realize, like, when I started hearing about the movie, and I assumed, because horror movies are generally shorter, other than, like, The Shining, but that's kind of, like, the exception that proves the rule, because that's kind of more, I don't want to even say that's, more art house kind of film. This one, I don't even want to say that either. This one kind of has like a little more art house kind of thing to it, but it's more like a gothic melodrama, but it's also like really grotesque in that way that it has like really fucked up like body horror in it too. As it goes on, like Lockhart, as well as the viewer, and that's probably my only very, very minor complaint, is that you will probably figure out what's going on. Well, maybe not exactly, but you'll probably figure out what's going on before Lockhart does. He's not like the sharpest tool in the shed. You know what I mean? Let's call it that. But yeah, so you're sure that whatever's going on at this spa, though, has something to do with the water, because they're very adamant about, oh, the water, it has healing properties and it's miraculous and it's really good for you. So it's like they just, oh, just drink the water. It's so good. It'll cure what ails you, shit like that. So you know that whatever's going on, like, has something to do with the water. Also, you're pretty sure that whatever's going on has something to do with like the creepy history of the place, which he gets told, I think, by the driver and then like another woman that's a patient there that is kind of like a history buff. And so she knows, like, does a little bit of research about it. And the whole thing was that the place originally was owned by this baron who ended up marrying his sister, and then he was trying to cure her of what you don't really know until later on. But of course, because there was some incest going on up there, the townsfolk weren't having that, and they actually like burned the place to the ground like 200 years ago or something like that. And then the place was like subsequently rebuilt. So there's kind of like still a lot of animosity like between the towns, because they kind of like, you know, generations ago, they kind of like remember that shit. Also, in this movie, there are lots and lots and lots of eels wriggling around in very eel-like fashion, as they do during multiple scenes. Though, for a time, you're not actually sure if they're really there or if Lockhart is actually losing his mind and hallucinating them as a side effect of the treatment. Because, in fact, for a while, I think kind of much like Shutter Island, the movie kind of teases us with the possibility that Lockhart might actually have been sent to the spa as a patient, like, all along, and he might be experiencing, like, a nervous breakdown. Which, because they kind of go into, like, he had some shit that happened to him in the past, because his dad was also, like, this high-powered executive, I believe, in the same company. And when he was a kid, like, his dad committed suicide, like, you know, like, basically pulled over in a car, like, at a bridge and, like, jumped off a bridge while the kid was in the car. And he has, like, a lot of unresolved, like, emotions about that and, like, guilt about that for not helping him. So you're kind of, like, so obviously he's really troubled. So you think maybe, oh, there's something going on, like, maybe he's imagining all this, or maybe he's been a patient here the whole time or something like that. So they do kind of like tease that possibility also. Now, this isn't a gory movie by any means, but I will say, if you are very squeamish about creepy crawlies, about eels in particular, or snakes, I guess, but mostly eels, you're gonna have a bad time, because there's a lot of eels and they are kind of everywhere. They're going to people's mouths, they're going up, they're swimming around. It's not a good time. So like I said, there's also one very wince-inducing dental sequence. So if you're very sensitive to violence involving teeth, you might want to cover your eyes during that part, because, and maybe your ears too, because it's pretty nasty. It's pretty nasty. Like, I was just like watching it. I was like, holy shit, I can't believe they fucking, because a lot of times they'll kind of like show it a little bit and then like cut away, but this one didn't really cut away. It just kind of like, yep, there they go. They're going right in there. So yeah, so it was that. I will say too, and this isn't really a criticism, but I will say that the main character of Lockhart is fairly unlikable. But like I said, I don't mind that, because he's supposed to be. I mean, he's supposed to be kind of a douche at the beginning. Like, I'm this go-getting executive, like, with no, you know, not like American Psycho territory, but kind of like that, where he's just kind of like, he doesn't have a wife or kids or pets or anything like that. Like, he doesn't care about anything but advancement and like making money and shit like that. And as the story goes on, you actually start to feel more and more sympathy for him as he, you know, kind of gets more and more trapped by his circumstances. And there's like a bunch of gaslighting going on. Like, is he really a patient here? Are they just telling him that? Like, what the fuck is going on? And he also does evolve as a character, you know, kind of slowly losing this selfish, cold arrogance, you know, the shell that he has, as his predicament, like, gets more and more dire, like, as the movie goes on. And as he also realizes that he has feelings for Hannah, the young girl there, and that he really needs to, you know, get both of them the fuck out of there because she's in danger. Now, as I mentioned, this film is quite long, but in my opinion, I don't feel like it dragged. I mean, I was pretty into it, like, from the beginning. You know, the mystery was really compelling. I, you know, like I said, you can kind of see where it's going, but not exactly. Like, I didn't get, like, the full, you know, the full, like, convoluted glory of it. Like, you know what I mean? But you pick up bits and pieces, so you kind of know, like, where it's going. And I really, really liked the whole vibe of the visuals. Like, some of them were, like, really disquieting. Like, there's especially, like, this one scene sort of near the beginning, I guess, where he first gets to the spa, and he's looking for Pembroke, and they say, oh, he's in the steam bath or whatever. And he, like, goes in there, and it's just this really weird, like, dreamlike, kind of like he goes in the steam rooms, and there's all these rooms and there's nobody in there. And then, like, he goes around and he goes in one room, and then he looks and, like, all the doors are gone and, like, shit like that. And then, like, a deer walks past. It's crazy. So it has, like, a lot of dreamlike, like, really weird, grotesque imagery like that, which I really dug. And the ending, I'm not going to spoil, but it pulls out all the stops and just goes full on banana pants, like, toward the end. But, like I said, if you kind of approach this as a gothic horror that is absolutely embracing all of the excess that usually comes with that genre, then I think you'll find a lot to appreciate in this movie, at least as I did. I mean, like I said, just like everything is subjective. It's a gorgeous film to look at. The plot is a bit complicated and maybe slightly nonsensical. I didn't find it that. It actually did make sense to me, but some people, I've heard other people make that criticism. But I was actually invested all the way through, and I just rolled with whatever was going on. Like I said, it's a little crazy toward the end, but I kind of liked that. It just kind of went over the top. It really is a fascinating film, and I think it deserves kind of more appreciation or more consideration just for this peculiar work of art that it is. I mean, this is a director who made, like, the first three Pirates of the Caribbean movies. He's, like, a big director, and the fact that they gave him all this money and he made this bizarro fucking horror movie, like I said, that should be applauded, and I kind of wish that more directors would just do crazy shit like that. So, you know, props to Gore Verbinski for just going all out and saying, yeah, I don't give a shit if this makes money or not, apparently. I'm just gonna make what the fuck I want to make, and it's this nutty, like, fucking gothic crazy thing. But yeah, so the movie is currently on Tubi for free, at least in the US, if you would like to watch it. I'm sure it's on other streaming services as well. And I actually really liked it. If you like gothic stuff, if you like some of Guillermo del Toro stuff, this stuff like that, it's kind of in that sort of vein. Like, it's in, like, Shutter Island, a little bit of Frankenstein-y kind of stuff. So if you like that kind of stuff, then you will probably dig it as well. Although, like I said, it is a time commitment. It's 2.5 hours long. So just know that going in. And that will do it for this Flickers of Fear. I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.